We all have a story to tell. Let's tell yours. Welcome to the Intellectual People Podcast with your host, Jason. Come together and listen to journey stories and more from interesting people. Welcome your host, Jason.
Today, I have Jennifer Laurie on. How are you doing today, Jen?
I'm great, thank you.
So, Jennifer, you have a book called Alone in the Back Seat, correct?
Yes.
What is Alone in the Back Seat?
Well, that's a very broad question. Alone in the Back Seat is my memoir. Should I show it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a picture of my book. I'll hold it up closer. It is a memoir that comprises basically my whole life. It is not written in chronological order, but it includes parts from my childhood, adulthood, my international love affairs, travels, living abroad in three different countries, and divorce, as well as renting out my living room and sometimes half of my bedroom to 71 people from 16 different countries for 9 years to help me pay my mortgage. It also includes some dating.
Okay, some dating. So this is going to get real juicy then, is what you're telling me.
Pretty juicy. Okay.
Why did you write it?
That's a great question. That's a great question because I think my answer is not typical. This is not a book that I had planned to write. It just happened. I was compelled to write it. So I don't want to give too many spoilers, but there was this guy. He was at the very beginning when I became single and I was, I think, 41 or 42 years old. I started dating this guy and I was so into him, and it didn't work out. I won't give all the details, but we ended up reconnecting about a year and a half after I thought I was never going to see him again. And I got to spend one more night with him, and it was just, you know, a dream come true. And I was so happy. And I was so happy that I just got to be near him that 5 days later, I was still so happy about it, even though nothing had changed, that I sat down, I think, in the bathroom stall at work on my phone, and I wrote a love letter. And I wasn't going to send it to him. I just wanted to get those feelings out. And when I wrote that letter, I read it and I was like, this is really good. Like, this is the beginning of a book. And people had always told me I should write a book because I've done so many interesting things. And so I wrote a book. I went home and I sat down at my computer for the next 23 days. And I wrote that book, the first draft, in 23 days. And I wrote the book like if I had free time and nothing to work on at work, in the bathroom, at the dentist office, on the metro, wherever I was where I could type, whether it was on my phone or my laptop, I was typing. Oh. And that's how I wrote the book. It just happened.
Are you a writer professionally before the book?
No.
No.
No, but I just had really, really good teachers in the Portland public school system in Portland, Maine.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a project manager.
Okay. In what sector?
IT.
Okay.
Well, digital.
So you wrote the book. Did that gentleman ever see what you wrote?
Yeah, he knows everything. Yeah, he knows all about it. I don't think he's read it, but he knows. We remain friends. So he was virtually with me every step of the way.
Is he still involved at all?
Yeah.
He is. Are you dating him?
No. I wish.
Why didn't it work out for him then?
Well, he's significantly younger than I am. And for him, that was a deal breaker.
How much younger?
He was 29 and I think I was 41 when we met. So that's a big difference.
As he gets older, I think it'll become less of a difference though, right?
I think sometimes people put people in a box, and even if through friendship and experiences, you never let them out of that box. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't have any hope that that will happen.
I got it.
But I am very happy that I know him.
Cool. How long were you married for?
I was married from start to finish for about 10 years, but we separated like at the end of the 8th year.
Why?
Well, I write about that in a book. My ex-husband was from Argentina, and there was a lot of culture, and we met there. So he came here for me. So there was a lot of cultural complications because of that. And I was at the time really uptight and really bratty and really not flexible and bossy. And I think probably often what a typical wet first wife might be like when she's trying to boss her husband around all the time and is a brat. So I, of course, didn't think that there was anything wrong with me. I thought it was absolutely perfect. But eventually he did not want to put up with my bossiness and all those other things anymore. And he wasn't perfect either, but this isn't about him. So he left. And I write in the book that when he left and I heard the lock click in the door, I saw every mistake that I made in perfect 2020 hindsight. Like everything that I could not understand that I was doing wrong, I understood. And it was too late, but I got it.
How old were you at that point when you realized?
At that point, I think I was 34.
We were
34 when we got married when we were 25, and we separated at 34. I think
I'm still young.
Yeah, yeah. So they're really hard lessons to learn, and it was a shame that I couldn't learn them in time because he's like a great guy, but you know, it just didn't work out that way.
Had you met him today, do you think you'd still be together? Or do you think you'd still even be compatible? Do you think who you are, Jennifer today, and gentleman of then is now today, do you think that you two would be compatible?
I do. I think that I changed so much because, you know, they say people don't change, but if you want to, you can. And if you have the experience that I had where your mistakes are shown to you in a way that you finally get them, then you can change. And I changed. I'm not like that anymore. And so I do think that, I mean, he's remarried, he has kids now, so that's like not going to happen. But I think he would like, it's a shame because I think he would like me a lot better now if he knew me now. And, you know, I didn't think highly of him when I was being a brat when we were married, but yeah, he's great. So I think, yeah, we would at least be friends. You know, I would like to be friends, but.
Right.
He has a different life now.
Good. I get it. Did you go to therapy for healing?
No. Actually, you know what? That's a good question. We went to therapy at the end of our relationship. And honestly, it really, really helped. And I recommend it so highly to people. I recommend it before things become insurmountable problems. Like if we had gone in the beginning of our relationship when we started having problems, I don't think that we would be divorced, you know?
Right.
Neither of us come from divorced families. We're like, and we didn't have a bad divorce. Like we both just want the best for each other. So I don't think that we would have ended up divorced if we had gotten help when we needed it. However, it was too late. By that point, he was mentally checked out. But I don't remember. I don't think I really went to therapy for much long afterwards.
So then how did you heal yourself? You said you became a better...
I cried a lot.
And that's all it took was crying?
I mean, well, I cried a lot and I had friends. But it wasn't like I didn't have like issues I needed to work through. Like we didn't have like trauma in our relationship. I mean, obviously divorce is it's trauma. It's a loss. It's you grieve, but I didn't have, you know, I didn't need to like heal from something. I mean, but I had to grieve like that, but that just takes time and tears. And soon after we split up, I started having to live with strangers in order to mortgage because he, you know, at the time we both earned the exact same amount and we were both putting in half and that was how we afforded our apartment. So after he left, he couldn't afford to keep putting in half because he had to pay to live somewhere else. So he gave me like a little bit of money for the first couple months, but like he couldn't and I wasn't going to, you know, be difficult about it. So I was like, what the heck am I going to do now? And so he left, I think, in October. And by November, I had strangers living with me. So that was, you know, very distracting.
How was that experience of having strangers rent a room from you?
Well, they didn't rent. Well, they rented beds in my living room. So, and at the time when I first started doing it, my intention was I thought, okay, well, like maybe I can rent out my couch. Like this was before Airbnb, like people weren't, this wasn't a thing that you rented out like your couch or you shared your house with strangers. Like this was like, I'm the original Airbnb.
Did you do like Craigslist?
Yeah. So I did Craigslist and, so I thought I would rent my couch and, but that wasn't enough money. Like one person wasn't going to cover it. So I ended up having two beds in the living room. And, but before that happened, this, I was supposed to have this guy, Florian, come live with me. And he was from Austria and he was coming to do an internship. And so he interviewed, but at the same time, of course, like at the time you have to interview people and you can't like make a choice until you've got, or you can't commit to someone until you got a check.
Right.
So I also interviewed this woman named Jasmine who was from Thailand. And Florian, So I told Jasmine, like, well, I'm waiting to hear back from this guy in Austria because I really liked him. And she's like, but I really want to live with you. Like, I really, like, she wasn't in a good situation. She's like, I really, really want to live with you. And so I was like, well, I mean, I guess I could share my room. So that's how I ended up starting off with two people. So Florian lived in was in the living room. Jasmine was in the bedroom with me. So I had two beds in the bedroom. And then it ended up, it's a long story. Well, it's in a book, but I ended up having it be another person that moved in. So then I had two beds in the living room and two beds in the bedroom. And there were four people in my one bedroom apartment for at least the first 2 or 3 years.
How did you deal with that?
Well, I am very much a realist. So I take reality and I accept it and I don't wallow and I don't, like, I'm solutions oriented. And the problem was I needed to pay my mortgage. And so I was going to do what needed to be done. And I wasn't going to think about, oh, I have no privacy or, oh, there's beds everywhere. Oh, this person didn't put that away. Like, or sharing everything that I have with people. Like, no, it was just like, focus on the goal, get my mortgage paid, give a warm, safe, nice, pleasant environment to people that are living with me and just do my job.
Did you ever have any issues with anybody?
I did.
What kind?
What I learned is that I'm very, very perceptive and my accuracy rate was 100% on who I chose to live with me. However, sometimes we feel sorry for people and we want to give someone a chance and we don't listen to our gut and our gut is telling us this is not a good idea. So I had two people that were not great experiences. One of them I actually had to get a restraining order against. The other one just left and stiffed me the rent that was due. So, but other than that, you know, I mean, I just blame myself because I didn't listen to my gut and I should have known, But other than that, everything was good. Like, literally, I never had in 9 years a single thing stolen.
That's incredible. That's great. Mm-hmm. Says at least there's some good people, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? I did have I had something borrowed, though. This is not in the book. So I couldn't find this pink dress of mine. And I was like, where is this pink dress? I cannot find this pink dress. And finally, I don't know if I remember the story perfectly, but I was at the dry cleaners. Oh, no, I went to the dry cleaners to say, like, do you guys have my, like, did I leave my dress here? Like, I cannot find this one dress. It's a dry clean dress. Like, do you have my dress? And so they're, like, going around. And I'm like, oh, my God, there it is. That's my dress. And I look at the tag, you know, or the receipt, and it's not my name. It's one of my roommates' name, who I don't think even lived with me anymore. Oh, wow. At the time, she had already moved out. So she had borrowed my dress, and which I did not know about, and brought it to the dry cleaner and forgot about it. She forgot to tell me, and she forgot to take care of it. So so I got it back.
Did she ever pay you back for the dry cleaning?
No.
But hopefully she'll see this and send you a check.
It's fine. She actually became a very good friend, so it's fine. Oh.
Well, hopefully she sees this and remembers and buys you a drink then. Would you do it again in retrospect?
Would I do what again?
Live with a bunch of strangers?
I mean, if I had to pay my bills, yeah.
You would?
I mean, yeah. It was in 2008. Like, I didn't have options. Like, this was at the height of the housing crisis. And, like, I wasn't going to bankrupt myself, you know? Yeah. Like, I didn't have a choice. I wasn't going to be able to sell. Like, I didn't have enough savings to have my apartment be on the market for long enough to sell it and to continue paying for it. And I wasn't going to go bankrupt. Like, I was financially impacted, like, not at all. Like, not at all by my divorce, not at all by any of that. Like, I was like, no. Like, I told you, if there's a problem, I'm going to find a solution.
Absolutely. You write this book, and was your plan on writing the book and then publishing the book, or was it more of a personal goal of just writing it but never really releasing it into the wild?
No, I wrote the book, and as soon as I read that love letter that I wrote, and I was like, this is really good, like, it was good every single word till the end of it. Like, I was like, this is going to be a great book. Like, so it was absolutely 100% the plan to publish it. And I mean, I turned it around in 10 months from the start to finish. So yeah, there wasn't time to think like, oh, should I not publish it? No, it was like, how do I publish it?
How was that process of publishing it?
So that's actually pretty interesting. Obviously, I knew nothing about it. And at the time, I was connecting with so many people through like dating, or I was like really putting myself out there. So all these like connections and like the universe was just aligning, and it was really interesting things that happened. So I, at the time, was really active on Facebook. And so I was telling all my Facebook friends, like, oh my God, I'm writing this book. I'm trying to get it to 20,000 words, 40,000 words. My goal is 60,000 words. And because, you know, you have to Google, like, how many words is a book? Like, how long is a book? You know, you don't know any of this stuff when you start writing a book. And so I said, so I guess I was close to being done with the draft. And I said, okay, well, now that I've written it, how do you publish a book? And luckily, I mean, it's just so crazy that this person that I am Facebook friends with said, oh, well, there's a writer's conference in a few weeks. You should go. So I was like, okay. So I prepared, you have to make this whole like booklet with all this. I worked so hard on it to make this, I can't remember what it's called, but like the whole booklet about my book, or kind of a redacted version. And you know, like a marketing plan and all this stuff. And I worked so hard on it to bring it to this writer's conference where I was going to get to pitch my book to different agents. And so I learned a lot, and it was really, really interesting. And I pitched my book to 7 agents, and 5 out of the 7 were interested. But what they told me was, if you, well, one of them in particular, who was the one that I wanted to work with, because his company is the agency for this author that I really like named Jen Lancaster. And he was the one that I wanted, and he was like totally interested, but he said, you know, in order to publish a memoir, you need 1 million followers. Hmm. And at the time, I had just started Instagram a few months before, but I only started it just like to have a central place for my own favorite photos. But I was never I never thought about having anyone follow me. So I was like, okay, like 1 million followers. I had, I think, 70 followers on Twitter. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I need to get to work. And he said, and you also have to show that you can't just write like one thing. Like, you have to show that you're an actual writer. You have to write more. So you should start a blog. And I was like, oh my God, now I have to have Instagram. I have to start a blog. Like, I have to grow my following. Like, can you just, like, this is like way more than I expected. So I started the blog. I probably like immediately. Luckily, my background, like we said earlier, I don't know if you were recording then, but is a digital project management. So I knew, thank God, a lot about websites and just getting them going. So I started the blog, and like I said, all these things in the universe were connecting. And so probably a few weeks later, I went to this party, and it was the party of my host mother from when I lived in Italy. And she had a house in Georgetown, but she had sold her house. And so she was having the party at her next door neighbor. She was in town visiting, and she wanted to host a party for her friends while she was in town. And so her next door neighbor from her house that she used to have let her host the party there. And this woman, it was probably like 75 years old, and her twin sister was visiting from Santa Barbara. Now, it was like so random that I end up meeting this woman from Santa Barbara at this party from this woman who doesn't even live here. And the woman from Santa Barbara was a book designer. So I told her I was, you know, I've written a book and I was in the process of publishing it. And I said, you know, what do you recommend? Do you think I should go with a publisher? Do you think I should self-publish? And I was expecting her, given that she was in her mid-70s, that she would tell me, oh, you know, get a publisher and, you right. know, go the old-fashioned way. But she looked at me and she was like, why do you want an agent? Like, they're just going to take all your money. You're going to make nothing. Like, go self-publish Amazon.com, you know? And wow. So I was like, okay. So I was very lucky to had worked with this designer at my previous job. I used to work at the American Red Cross National Headquarters, and I worked with the designer on the website there. He has a small company called Design Studios, and he so generously designed my book for me. Like, I knew what I wanted on the cover, but he designed it, because that's another aspect of publishing a book. Like, you need to design your book.
Right.
So he designed it for me, saving me thousands of dollars, and I just published it myself.
And that was it. How hard was it to get it on Amazon.com?
That is the easiest part of, well, for me, writing it and publishing it was the easiest part. Like, that was so easy. Like, I didn't even try.
What about finding printers?
Oh, well, this is what I'll tell you. So, but wait, let me finish answering the question. So the easy part was writing and publishing. And the hard part is marketing and letting people know that your book exists, because that guy who told me, we don't publish memoirs for people who don't have 1 million followers, he wasn't kidding. Because when your audience is 2,500 followers, which I'm very proud of myself that I got it that high, but when that's your whole audience, who's going to know your book exists, you know? So anyway, to answer your question, about printing. So Amazon is print on demand. So if you order my book on Amazon, they will print a copy for you.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Right?
Cool. And you also have an ebook version as well?
Yep.
Now, how did you go about marketing?
Well, my marketing tactics are, I think those are kind of secret.
Can you give us a little nugget?
So I just worked really, really, really hard to grow my Instagram account.
Okay.
And that is how I did it. So luckily I'm also a photographer. So I had a lot of content and I think I also have a marketing background as well. So from work at I worked at the Red Cross. So I felt like that was a forte for me, but it's really hard. And also I think I'm probably my own worst enemy because I got really into Instagram too late. So that was like what I focused on rather than maybe building relationships with other bloggers or writers. But I just was so overwhelmed by that. I didn't know how to do it. And then I was just like, well, forget it.
How many Instagram followers do you have now?
I only have like 2,500, so it's not that many.
So you're not continuing to really push that?
Well, I am, but it's really hard in quarantine when you can't travel. So it's really hard to come up with content.
Do you use traveling as a marketing tool?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, I can't give away my one little secret.
That's fair. That's fine. How long did you wait until after your divorce to start dating?
The
separation, you know.
I think I probably didn't wait very long because I wanted to distract myself from being so sad. So, and you know what? I was really, I felt a lot of pressure and anxiety about being like, I didn't want to be like young and single. Like I wanted, my worst nightmare was to be 30 and not married. And luckily that didn't happen because I got married young and I like,
right.
Didn't have that. But then I was like, oh my God, like I'm 34 years old and now I'm single. So I think I got on it right away, but also, so I'm Jewish. So I got on JDate, but I was also like, I'm not paying for this because I'm just like too cool. So my technique on JDate was that I would just respond to every single person that messaged me because I couldn't like reach out to people. So I just responded to everybody and everyone who asked me out, I was like, okay, I'll go out with you. So I went out with everybody and I did meet one guy I really liked, also too young for me, also dumped me. Well, this was before the guy who inspired me to write my book. Yeah. So that didn't work out. But then I actually ended up, and this is a kind of embarrassing to say, but I actually did end up dating one of my roommates. And that relationship, that's how we met because he moved in with me. But then he moved out after we got romantic because he didn't want to like, try to have an actual relationship. So he moved out. And then we started dating and we ended up dating for 6 years.
Oh.
And unfortunately that relationship was really bad and really unhealthy and awful and a huge waste of my precious time at that time, because that was from when I was, I think, 36 to 41.
Why did you let it go for that long then?
Well, it is really hard to extricate yourself from an abusive relationship where you don't know what the person is going to do. And it wasn't physically abusive. It was like verbal and emotionally abusive, but he was unhinged. And so when someone, it's so hard, I think, to imagine if you're not in that position, like how scary certain things can be, but they're scary because they're doing something so crazy that it's like, okay, well, like, where does the craziness end?
Right.
So one, like, for example, he would just like call me at work like 100 times on my work phone. And, you know, that's crazy. And, you know, it doesn't sound like, well, it doesn't sound that bad, I guess. If someone's calling you 100 times, you just like mute the ringer and ignore it. But it's not like that. It gives you so much anxiety and it's awful. And you don't know if they're going to do that. Then what else are they going to do? Right. And he would threaten things, you know, so it was hard. And actually, I got out of the relationship because a police officer got me out of it. So otherwise I don't know how I would have gotten out of it. It's terrifying. And the thing is that I'm not even like that. Like I'm like, it's kind of mind boggling that I ended up with someone like that because like, I have a really good self-esteem and the whole time we were together, I was like, man, he is like, I never thought it was my fault. Unlike with my husband where it really was my fault. Not all of it, but like a lot of it was my fault. Like in this case, I was like, wow, this guy has a problem. And I just like, but also you see some, sorry, I don't know if I'm going on for too long about this. This isn't even in the book, but, when you see someone, you know, they're struggling, like abusers, they don't want to be abusive. Like they're miserable. And he was miserable and he was struggling and he wanted to change and he wanted to improve. So you see incremental improvement and an effort. And then on the other hand, when they're not being crazy, they're like so sweet and nice and helpful and adorable. So it's like, you want to think, okay, well, if he's making effort and he's trying, then maybe he'll get better.
Right.
And also, lastly, there is no support in this country for mental health. Like, where do you take your abusive boyfriend to so that he can get fixed? Where do you do that?
Yeah, that's, I think, a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
So you move on from him, right? And then you're still on J-Date?
No. Okay. So that was a long, like, J-Date, no, So J-Date was like when I was 34 and then I met this guy. So I think it was 35 or 36. And then we split up when I was 41 and then I got on Tinder.
Oh boy.
And that's where I met in the book. His name is Nathan and he was the fourth guy that I went out with. And I never met anyone as good.
And that is the gentleman that you said before that's moved on. He's married with kids now.
No, that's my ex-husband who's moved on and married with kids. No, Nathan is still single. Well, I think he's single. I don't know.
But he's the much younger one.
Yeah.
Okay. And there has to be more, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I went out with so many guys. Like,
so was Nathan from the get-go a fun guy to go out with, and that's what it was at first? And he didn't really know what he wanted?
Well, I don't know because I was so naive. I mean, I was newly single. I was 40. I think I was 41 or maybe I was 42. I don't know. It doesn't really matter, I guess. And I was like matching, but I looked really young. Like my age did not set in until I turned 43. And then all of a sudden I like aged 10 years, but until I was like 42, I looked like I was 35. So I was, and I had my age range, really young on dating apps because the last time I'd been single, I was 34. So that's who I was attracted to. Like when I got on the dating apps and I saw guys my age, I was like, what? Like that. I remember when my dad was that age, like I don't date someone who I like was like, looked like the age of my dad when I was little, like, no.
Oh, that's funny.
So I ended up going out with really young guys. Like I would go out with 25-year-olds. I would, I tried. I really tried to go out with age appropriate men. But when Nathan wanted to go out with me and he was 29, I was so naive then. He was only the fourth person I went out with that I thought, you know, I thought maybe he was looking for a relationship and we didn't just like hang out or hook up. Like we went on dates, you know, it was like we were dating. So I thought because I was so inexperienced that like, okay, well, maybe this can go somewhere. And then he told me it couldn't. So then after that, I was so heartbroken. I mean, I was so heartbroken because this was like the ideal man for me. I mean,
would you say, Jennifer, that you were more heartbroken over Nathan leaving than your husband?
Oh, yeah, I'm still not over it. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still cry about it. I still cry about it. Like, okay. I mean, he was just like, if God or whatever higher, whatever, whoever the designer is of life and humans had like taken my order, this is it. So
explain your order. Let's hear it.
Well, I mean, he's just like incredibly handsome, like a movie star, and tall, which I didn't really care about until I met him. My ex-boyfriend was my exact same height, which I'm 5'3". So like, obviously I didn't really care about height. But he's 6'2". And after that, like that ruined me for, you know, dating my height again.
Why do you feel that the height?
I don't know. It's just nice to be like little and someone be bigger than you. So his, you know, he needed muscles and his skin was just, I mean, there's a lot of physical aspects of why he was my ideal man. But on top of that, he had a job that he was extremely successful at. He made like, he had a really good career. So he was really smart. And funny and just, I don't know. And the thing I think that I love the absolute most about him, aside from everything, is he's really into aesthetics and design. And so am I. And I don't know anyone else that is so into style and taste and like stuff like that. So I just, yeah. Oh, so you were asking me about dating. So after him and I was so heartbroken, I tried so hard and I knew that it was going to be impossible to find someone as good as him. Like it's not possible. And it makes me so annoyed when people are like, oh, he's out there. Oh, you'll find him. Like, no, there's no way. Unless he's like in the NFL or he's like some like famous actor. There's no one that can compare. So just stop. But anyway. Anyway, what was I going to say? So I tried because I was like, okay, I'm 42 years old. Okay. So I was 42 because I remember this. I was like, I'm 42 years old. I do not want to regret 10 years from now when I'm 52 that I not try harder to find someone. So I'm going to date like it's my job. And I didn't even care about finding a boyfriend or getting remarried again. Like I didn't care, but I did it for my future self. I was like, I don't want to have my future self be mad at my former self that I did not try. So I tried and I tried really, really hard. And I went out with over 100 guys and I kept a spreadsheet and I like kept track of it. And I have all this data and I learned a lot. And then I quit because it wasn't fun.
So what did you learn from all your data?
I learned from my data. Well, I learned, my data was a confirmation of something that I already knew, which is that it's really hard to find a spark. And people always say, oh, well, people aren't really trying to connect because there's so many options out there. You can just swipe. So you can be like really picky and just go on to the next. But the thing is, I don't really buy that because if you meet someone and you have a spark, then you're not going to want to keep swiping. And what I found out of all the guys that I went with, that my spark rate was really low because it's really, really hard to find a spark.
You're not under the impression that finding a spark is really when you're face to face with that person?
Well, I was. I met them.
Oh, I thought you meant when you swiped.
I would keep my conversations to a minimum. I was like, I don't want to waste time messaging you. Let's just meet and have it be like you're actually meeting in real life. Because that's one thing I learned is in the beginning, I was like, try to message people. And then you find someone you like, and then you meet them and you're like, no, like I have no attraction. So I didn't want to have any more of that situation. So I just be like, let's just meet and see.
Right.
And that felt more, you know, a little bit more natural. But then once I started writing my blog, then people would read my blog because I would put my blog on my dating app profile. And so they would read it and then they would know me. So they would know me. So then they were a lot nicer to me.
Were they rude otherwise?
Well, by my definition, which would include maybe not like on the date. I think most men I met were fine. Like I didn't have any bad, I only had one bad experience. But what I mean is, you know, maybe not messaging afterwards and saying, thank you, it was nice to meet you, or ghosting, or all of those like just proper manners that I think have been lost, you know? So once they knew, because my blog talks a lot about dating advice, and I mean, that's really was the focus of my blog, most of it, people knew that they were going to be judged on their behavior. They were a lot nicer to me.
Would you agree that dating almost became like marketing for you rather than finding a man? It was almost no. And why would you say that, even though you used the dating for your marketing?
Well, the thing is, I didn't use the dating for my marketing. I put my blog on my profile because it's applicable. I mean, I was writing about what everybody was doing. So if I had been writing about gardening, I probably wouldn't have put it on my dating profile, but I was writing about dating. And I didn't go on dates with people looking for stories. Like people would always say to me like, oh, like, am I going to be in your blog? And I'd be like, I mean, if there's a story, you know, and what I like to write in my blog normally was nice stories, like happy stories, like hopeful stories, like nothing ever worked out. But like, I wanted other people to read it and say like, like maybe I won't meet this great guy of my dreams, but like, maybe I'll make a friend, like put a positive spin on things. Right. So I wasn't trying to like ever throw anyone under the bus or make anyone look bad. And so, no, I wasn't using my blog. I was literally trying to date to give myself an opportunity to meet someone. And then it turned into people wanting to meet me because of my blog. And then I'd still meet them. And then I was like, do these count as dates? Because I don't feel like I'm not going into this as it's a date, but I was still open. Like if there was a spark, it would have turned into a date, you know, but right. No, that, my dating wasn't marketing.
And you literally never had a spark after Nathan.
Oh no, that's not true. I mean, I found other people that I had sparks with. I mean, there was another guy that I also really liked I liked two. I mean, there were a couple guys that like I had sparks with, but they were way too young. So it was pointless and I wasn't going to fall for the age problem again. But there was one other guy aside from Nathan who I really liked, who I would have been really happy with, who was age appropriate and also checked a lot of my boxes, but also didn't want me. So it's just rejection. I'm constantly rejected.
Did they ever give you a reason why? Did he ever give you a reason why? Specific reason?
Yeah, he did. But I think in this case, I think he just is really not open to sharing his life with a woman. You know, he's a single dad and his kids are his main focus. And I don't think that he has space in his life for a woman.
Okay. Do you still date today?
No. No way. I am so done with dating. I have absolutely no interest. I'm just going to be by myself and single and have nobody affecting my mood or dissatisfying me or making me I'm done.
You really are.
Yeah.
Do you get asked out now that you're single and you're set on that?
Oh yeah, I get asked out all the time because of my Instagram. Like,
you turn them all down.
Yeah.
Interesting. So where does Jen Lori go from here?
Well, I'm not really going in. I'm not going anywhere. We're in a pandemic.
Yeah, of course. But where? How does?
You know, I It's gone to the point where I cannot even listen to people that are talking about dating because I'm just like, why are you still looking for someone? Like, why would you want to do that for yourself? It is a toxic environment. I don't want to expose myself to any more bad experiences of being ignored or being ghosted or, you know, getting excited and disappointed. I don't want to do that. And I don't understand why anybody does. Like I haven't actually put this, I've never written about this. So I haven't really formulated, like, I don't know if I've ever actually said this out loud to anyone, but it's something I think about. So you might be the first person hearing this. But when you're in a relationship, you have a lot, even if you're in a good relationship, you're still going to have mood swing. Like you're still going to be like either really happy that they were so sweet to you and they like made you coffee in the morning. And then you're going to be like really pissed that they left their socks on the floor. Like there's just like, and when you're by yourself, you don't have those mood swings. So I'm not like super happy, but I'm content. And I am peaceful and I am neutral. And I'm like, I like that. And another thing I realized about myself is I'm also insatiable. And what insatiable means is that like I want a lot of attention. I'm insatiable in, you know, in every way. Okay. So you can put a rated R spin on that as well. Like I'm insatiable in every way, in every sense.
Okay.
And when you are insatiable, that means that you cannot be satisfied. And that means that you live in a state of dissatisfaction. So I don't want to live in a state of dissatisfaction. I want to just be even keel, neutral, happy on my own.
So then how do you provide yourself with the physical attraction and want and need that you probably desire?
I just don't think about it. Turn it off. Because honestly, it can make you miserable. Like and I do write about this in my book, like, you know, I had always been in a relationship. I had a boyfriend in college. We broke up and 3 weeks later I met my ex-husband. And then I, you know, dated, I guess, but then I met my boyfriend who I was with for 6 years. So I always had a man in my life. So So I never had to worry about, well, where am I going to have sex? You know, like I didn't worry about that. And then when I became single, I was 42, I completely freaked out because I'm like, I'm aging. I'm not going to look good anymore. And like, who's going to want me? And like, how am I going to be sexual? And it was so, so stressful. And it was stressful for a really long time because I didn't find, even though I had dated so much, I didn't find someone and I didn't want to have sex with like tons and tons of people.
Right.
So it was really stressful for a really long time. And then probably like 2 years ago, I was like, you know what? I'm not getting anything out of stressing over this. Maybe it was a year ago. I was like, I need to just not stress about this anymore. Just like, don't stress about it. Just stop thinking about it. It's not going to happen. Think about something else.
Okay. And you put all your effort into your book?
That was after my book.
Well, now.
Oh, now? My book's been out. I just had the 3-year anniversary of publishing it. And now, I try to engage, like, of course I still want to sell my book, but like I said, like without traveling, you're not exposed to more of an audience. So it's just like the pandemic has really hurt my book sale growth. So I just try to think of like cool and engaging and fun content for my Instagram. And I engage a lot with my followers. I don't ignore anyone. I hate being ignored. So I don't do that to people. And I end up having a lot of people that write to me that aren't, because for men, it's I'm like an expert on men now because the majority of my followers are male. They're 70% male. So I don't know how to break into the female market. I cannot figure it out. So, but I, because I'm, you know, like a sexy woman, even though I don't really look sexy in this video, but in my photography, I am, and in my stories, I am. Men, you know, want to reach out to me. And so I know how difficult dating is for men. And I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of men about it and how hard it is for them. And I really know where their struggles. And I know that there are a lot of really lonely men out there. And sometimes I think I'm the only woman that responds to them. So it's, so I like to, I don't want anyone to feel like I felt when I felt so lonely. So I'll respond.
So you respond, you help them. Have you ever gotten anybody back with a positive response in terms of you helped them and now they have
a message? Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Like I've gotten like so much appreciation for dating advice or just being responsive or my blog post. They love my book. I have 142 reviews on Amazon, which is really good, I think, for how small my audience is, and they love it. So, I get a lot back from these strangers. And even though I'm not interested in dating, like my messages are always full. I always have so many messages to respond to. And I appreciate that so much because I don't have one man in my life to tell me that I'm beautiful or that I'm sexy or that they like, you know, that they think I'm cool. But I have like all these strangers that are so nice to me and they're so supportive and they take away my loneliness. So I'm never lonely anymore, which I struggled with a lot.
So you are no longer alone in the backseat.
I'm definitely still alone in the backseat, but you can be alone and not lonely, right?
This is true. Very true. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
I want everybody to go check it out at www.aloneinthebackseat.com. Jennifer, do you have anything else to say to anybody?
Well, I hope you read my book. It's called Alone in the Backseat. It's available on Amazon. And I've really enjoyed talking to you. So thank you very much for taking the time to interview me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Find us on YouTube and Facebook at the Intellectual People Podcast and online at theintellectualpeoplepodcast.com. Check back for exciting new episodes.